Hello, my name is Debbie Boone, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, The Bend, where we explore how successful people, some well-known and others not as much, navigated the path and emerged in a better place when life threw them a curve. It's inspired by one of my favorite sayings, the bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve. These conversations will hopefully help you and inspire you to embrace your personal bend and flourish. I hope you enjoy The Bend and add it to your subscriptions. And if you need help with your own personal navigation and are in veterinary medicine, please feel free to reach out to me at Debbie Boone, 2 Manage Vets Consulting. Now enjoy The Bend and be inspired by our amazing guest. Welcome.
Well, welcome everyone to this episode of The Bend. Today, my guest is Alyssa Mages. She told me to remind her, like Pages. She is a BS in marine biology and a CVT. She is the co-founder and the chief visionary officer of Empowering Veterinary Teams, LLC. She co-founded EVT to provide training programs, materials, and coaching and learning opportunities for veterinary practices, as well as content development and training directives for veterinary industry service providers. The team consists of veterinary professionals, industry leaders, and coaches. She also graduated from the University of Rhode Island with a BS in marine biology, which led her to education conservation track. And ultimately, her desire to learn and do more led her to transition to the veterinary field, where she attained an AS in veterinary technology from Manor College and added CVT to her credentials. She has over 16 years of veterinary experience and has worked in numerous sectors in the industry. Throughout her tenure, she has held multiple leadership roles, including lead veterinary technician, adjunct professor, and education and development coordinator. Alyssa's love of teaching and her passion for the education, evolution, and empowerment of the support team members in veterinary medicine led to the launch of EVT in October of 2019. So your business is kind of a baby business, right?
We are. We're in our infancy. I think we've graduated up into training pants now, so that we're doing good.
Well, that's good. Well, you brought a lot of experience with you into this new business, but you did say you have a degree in marine biology. And what was your original goal when you went to school?
Well, honestly, that childhood story of so many of us, like I went on a whale watch and I want to swim with them. And so made that happen. It was fantastic. I worked in the Florida Keys for a little over a year right out of school, realized it was fantastic. And I was loving the teaching part of it. I also met my husband there. So that was pretty fantastic. But it wasn't enough. There was something that was missing. I wanted to do more, to be more of a presence into it. And it was actually at a swim competition where one of the coaches said, like, what are you going to do with your life? Oh, okay. All right. Let's think about that. So I did some volunteer work at a turtle rescue center and realized that was it. You know, like we took melanomas off of them and, you know, untangled them from fishing wires, and you could just see their quality of life improve. Like that is what I want to do. So I didn't have any veterinary experience though. So that was where I started volunteering. I was about 22 at the time.
I love the turtle rescue. I mean, I live on the coast of South Carolina. And so when we go out on the beach in the spring and the summer, the turtle nests are there. And it's a big deal here when they start to hatch that people will come out and they kind of help, you know, they don't touch them, but they watch the babies go to the ocean. Yes. And try to make sure that everybody has their lights out. That's one of the rules, is you don't turn your porch lights on. You want to make sure the turtles can get to the ocean and follow the moonlight till they get out there. But there's also a turtle rescue here that helps a lot of the loggerheads and from our area to get untangled from the nets and the stuff that they ingest too. This is the other thing too, that we are throwing our garbage into the ocean and these poor animals are suffering because of it. Yes. But that's a whole other podcast, right?
It is. I know, I could speak to that all day. Plastic free.
Exactly. So, you know, you wanted to do more. So what path did you follow to get to, you know, to do more with your
Are you ready? Animals? It's a bit circuitous.
This is called the bend. So this
is that's perfect. Right. It makes it perfect. So there's a lot of bends and some dog legs and everything like that. So, the training season ended in the Keys, my boyfriend at the time, who ended up, we ended up getting married, got into graduate school in Vancouver, British Columbia. I have family out there. So the dating cycle was very fast, the courtship rather. It was 5 months, got engaged, and out we went. So we lived with my aunt and uncle for a time on an island, and there was an island veterinary clinic, and he saw treated everything from cats, dogs, stranded seal pups, loons, farm animals. And so I was like, this is fabulous. Get me in this. So learned a ton, just through volunteering with him. And then once we were officially married and, we had our working papers and things, I was able to transition into a bigger practice where I, fell in love with surgery. So moved to the mainland. We were on an island, went to downtown Vancouver, and then started working at a referral center as a scrub nurse in orthopedics and soft tissue. And it's like, this is what I want. I want to do this. I want to be the one holding the scalpel, not the Meyerdings to retract all the muscles. But it was a great shoulder workout, good isometrics there. And so they encouraged me very supportively, you know, go apply. For med school, do it. You should do this. I'm like, okay, I'm not Canadian. So, and there's only 20 schools in the US. Ah, so they're like, that's okay. You've got the grades, you've got the connections. So, applied and got into Tufts, which was really exciting. I deferred because my husband was finishing his PhD at the time and then went to go back again. And just kidding, gonna be a mom. So, and my mentor at the time said, you know what, you can always come back to this. This is not a game changer. This is not a career killer. She's like, but you only get one chance, one first time to be a mom. Do that. And I'm really glad I did. And it was, okay, let's do this on a grad student budget. Okay. And Claire, you know, she came in, she was determined to be there, and she's just been a joy. So about a year after 10 months, we then moved back to the States. Thought we had jobs lined up in Florida, but it was 2008. So we remember what kind of a year that was.
I do well. Yes.
So everything unfortunately fell through. So we no longer had positions at U of F. So we had a fortunate that my parents had extra living space. And so we came back up to Pennsylvania. And veterinary technicians can work anywhere, fortunately. So I found a position in a local, kind of a hybrid practice, GP and emergency, and really fell in love with emergency medicine and met a dear friend. And she's like, you know what, let's get you trained up and I'm opening a clinic. Come and be my lead tech. Great. So did that and then started at Manor in that same year in 2009. And
you mentioned moving in the middle of a recession and coming down there and not having a job, which you thought you did. And so you're going to U of F, which is one of my favorite schools. I love,
yes.
But tell me, what were you thinking? I mean, when you got down there, and that's gotta have been scary.
It was, fortunately we were on the way when we found out. So we didn't get all the way down there, which thank goodness, because that would have been a heck of a detour. So we were mid-country with my husband's family. He's from Kansas. So we were on the cattle ranch. So we're hanging out with the cows. And we're like, oh, okay. So we extended our stay with them for a little bit while we could kind of sort things out, and then got my parents and we figured it all out. And I'm very fortunate to be blessed with a partner who's like, you know what? It's okay. We'll figure this out. I'm the one that's like, ah! Life. And over time I've adapted to his type of thinking of like, you know what, we have all these other plans, we have people, we'll figure this out. And it was okay. It did take some conversations, and I found a fabulous Reiki master/psychotherapist, and she helped me through the last part of it when we got back east. And I'm a huge supporter and proponent for that, to get that help if you need it. I didn't realize I needed it until my mom was like, wake up, you need help. Okay. And that was a real blessing as well. So, and just kind of taking what life handed us and just figuring it out, like, okay, well, this didn't work. Let's go here. Let's try this. Oh, that's working. Okay. Let's do that. So lived with my parents and then moved to downtown Philly and lived there for a time, and then moved out to the suburbs when it was time for schooling and we needed more options for our daughter, and we were expecting kid number two. So we've been out here for 8 years. And I you know, at the time I've had multiple knee surgeries and things like that too. So I've had to kind of vacillate between active practice positions as well as adjunct professorship. And then I did sales for a time. That was not a good fit, and came back into that education and nursing role that I most recently left this past June. Mm-hmm. So
tell me, you obviously have moved through a different career paths and done a lot of things in veterinary medicine. And mm-hmm. I used to run emergency, so I understand that. That's fun. I mean,
I love it.
You want to say, oh, that's not really fun because everybody's stressed out. And yeah, things are stressed out, but it's the medicine is so in. I mean, it's such big medicine, you know, it's never boring. It's always something different. And I always laughed and said, I felt like my doctors were adrenaline junkies.
We are. Yeah. The whole team is.
Yeah. It's like, hit by cars coming in. Let's get ready. And everybody grabs something, right, and races to the door and crash cart in hand. And everybody's ready to make a move there. But you obviously have made another change in your path because now you've started a company. So what was your thought process in changing your path, or was there a reason behind that, that you kind of moved out of what you were doing and into having your own business?
Yes. It's kind of multifaceted, as most decisions tend to be. There's not one like key thing. So I'll try to keep it short. I know I'm chatty. But physically, I couldn't do the long hours on my legs anymore. I've had both knees reconstructed with grafted cartilage and pins and screws and everything. And it just, after, you know, 6 to 8 hours, I was hurting, and it was not physically sustainable for much longer. I knew that. And I was also at a juncture professionally where I was making an impact, but it wasn't, it wasn't big enough. It wasn't changing the conversation. It was benefiting just a small few when I was so hopeful it could benefit so much more. And so it was also at a juncture where I had been doing the swing shifts and the different long hours and going here and there and everywhere. And I felt I'd missed a lot with my family, with my kids. And that was another personal choice. Like, you know what? This feels right. And it feels like it's the time to take that chance, to really push it out there, get out of my comfort zone and see if this takes hold. You know, if this speaks to anyone else, if this resonates in a way that I feel it really can. And thank everything and everyone, it's starting to.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're in a position that a lot of technicians definitely find themselves in, and that is physically, it is so wearing on your body mm-hmm. to do some of the work that we do up and down off the floor so many times a day. And tell me kind of a little bit about behind that, when you finally just had to say, I'm going to have to figure out something else because I physically can't do this anymore. Because I think that maybe that story would be very helpful to a lot of others in your position.
Oh, sure. Well, even though being a veterinary technician or nurse, what your title is, as an assistant doctor, CBPM, whatever title you have, that doesn't define you. It's a part of who you are. There's got to be something else. Like, what do you like to do when you're not home, right? I mean, you mentioned doing the turtle watches. I'm sure you're involved in your communities. I was, you know, and I had different hobbies and things. I'm an artist. I like to create new things. Everyone on the ER floor can MacGyver the heck out of a situation. You know that if you have to fit a breathing tube and catheter setup and everything in a bulldog puppy that's like this big, you've got to figure out how to make that happen. So, all right, I've been doing this. How else can I make this work? And I love to write. And these were all hobbies and kind of activities. Can I do that? Is that a viable thing? Yes. You know, so recognizing those parts of yourself that maybe you haven't given much thought or light to and haven't utilized and have just kept yourself defined by one role, we're so much more than that. You know, it's we are ourselves. And that's kind of one of my biggest catchphrases to remind people is that you're not just anything. You know, you're not just a vet tech. Well, I'm just an assistant. I can't do my job as a tech without my assistants. You know, the team, we have to work together. So what parts of you are you holding back? What haven't you tapped into yet? What is something that gets you so excited? And kind of identifying those things within yourself that can bring something beautiful and new and valuable to the industry.
The person who helps me with my social media was a veterinary assistant for many years.
Yeah.
And this was the thing that she loved to do. And so when she was still working in clinics, she was on a social media group with me and some other people. And I said, I'm looking for somebody that can help me with, you know, my social media stuff part-time. And she said, oh, I think I'd like to do that. And I said, great. So I reached out to her and we just started working together. Well, then I said, you know, I gave her name to a couple other people and a few other people. And now she has a company and now she has 3 employees or 4 employees. And so, you know, just finding the thing that you're passionate about, I think it's a great tip that you gave. There's more to you than just the work that you do at the present. There are so many other things. For myself, like you, I like to write. I used to like to paint back when I had some hours in the day to do that, but it's creativity. It's using that creative brain to do things that are, you know, different, that make the education that we give sticky for people, that, you know, it's not the same old we've heard over and over and over again. How can we make it this time so that people really get it?
Right.
And that it's going to be with them and it's going to manifest change for our profession.
Exactly.
I love the fact that you're a change implementer, because that's me. I want to make things different and better. And I was talking to Adam Greenbaum just before I talked to you, and we were talking about changing the profession. The fact that he sees a lot of veterinary professionals not changing or being stuck in their rut. Yeah. And he said, what can we do about this? He said, we're having the same conversation about turnover. We're having the same conversation about using technology. We're having the same conversation about, you know, difficult clients and negative reviews. How can we change what's happening? Because I can't see that they're working to change. So tell me, what you've got going on there to get this change happening.
Well, it's multifaceted, right? So there are so many existing potentials within the clinics that we just don't see. Right. So that's where our kind of manifestation of what we're trying to do is finding those leaders that are already there. You know, you already have someone, like you had the assistant that was fantastic at social media. No one knew. Great. Then she can take care of the company's website or do your social outreach. There is someone that loves to teach. Fabulous. They write up the in-house training materials. You have an artist on hand. Great. Teach them how to make do-it-yourself vessels, right? So what we're looking to do is have that conversation about training, instead of it being like a, this is what you need to do, is go in and meet with everybody and find out who's already good at what. And then they lead that conversation. And then take the focus off of, from the training aspect, the individual, and focus on the process. So you change how it's delivered, right? So for what I've discovered through my tenure as a swim coach, as a professor, and then as a nurse, you train skills, but you coach an individual. And that's not the same thing. And what we tend to fall into from a training perspective, at least in the practices I've been a part of, is that, well, this gal's been here the longest, this one's the best at this, so they're going to train you. But what if they're not good at it? Or where they don't like it? You know, if you don't like what you're doing, oh my gosh, we're in the middle of a pandemic, we can't train right now because we're drowning. Okay. So let's get resources. Let's find people that can do it. Let's outsource this. Let's change this. Let's make it look like that we're focusing on the skills and supporting the individual. So instead of someone's a beginner and that one's intermediate and that one's kind of advanced, no, they're in the learning phases. They're developing their skills. They've mastered those. So you change that conversation based upon the everyday things that we do and build from there. And then you work with those people that are strong in this area to grow others that aren't. But they have something that they're really good at. So then they can help. And in turn, you've just empowered 2 different individuals that then empower each other, that then redevelops and refocuses your team. So it's a simple concept, but to implement it is very difficult because we have all of those protocols and practices in place and have been for years. So it's just that gradual, like, have this conversation, let's let that sit for a second, and then let's try it out.
One of the points that you make, I love, because it is finding out what people like to do and putting them in charge of that. And one of the frequent kind of, loops that I hear from managers all the time is, you know, I don't have time to do anything. I don't have time to do this because so-and-so is always asking me a question and I have to get involved in this. And it's all about delegation. And what you're talking about is delegating bits and pieces of all the things that we have to do in a veterinary practice to those people who enjoy doing those. Mm-hmm. And that way, as a manager, you don't have to do it all. And I've often trained managers to say, look, the manager's job is not to do all the work, but to see that the work gets done by the people who are good at doing it. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Just because somebody's been doing it a long time doesn't mean they have a temperament to be a trainer. Because if they're impatient, then that trainee just feels that impatience. And again, going back to how our brain is all fuzzy mm-hmm. right now because of COVID. Well, when you put fear and impatience and embarrassment on top of it, then their brain is incapable of learning, or it takes it much longer to learn than somebody who can make that person feel relaxed, look at their learning style, and help them learn the way they need to learn.
That's my speaker talked to us earlier too. Sorry. But you, and exactly what you just alluded to there with the learning styles, that's a huge part of it is, you know, figuring out, are they visual, auditory, read, write, kinesthetic, a combination? Most of us are. And then usually how you learn translates into how you teach. And you can learn how to be a trainer or a coach. You just have to want to. So it's really kind of identifying those that already exist and then and working with them to make it a better process for sure.
Well, for many years, I have been teaching the DISC personality profile. And one of the first things I do is to go in and do DISC profiles on the team members and find out where they're coming from, because there are people who are really compliance personalities who are excellent at that detail-oriented work and that inventory control and bookkeeper and quality control and your lab analyzers. And then there are other people who are more suited to being up there with the public, and put those people on your front desk or put them into your exam rooms because they enjoy the interaction with people and their natural charisma makes them convincing to others. So get them to do those things. So it really has to do with understanding and knowing the people on your team rather than thinking that they are all, you know, round pegs and that they all can go interchangeably into whatever round hole you want them to go in there. But there are people who do things well, and there are people who can do them, but don't really love to do them. Exactly. And at least part of your day, you need to be doing something that you love. You know, you can kind of deal with the other. I laughed this morning. I was talking to Dr. Cody Krillman, and I said, you know, for me, I loved working with people. In fact, I liked dealing with difficult people, which most people were, are you insane? You know, you like the difficult clients, but for me, that was a personal challenge as a customer service expert. But I could go and deal with the public for a little while, and then I could go back and keep books. But I couldn't keep books all day. I had to get out, and I had to see some people. And otherwise, I would have been miserable, and I would have quit. If I had to do books all the time, I'd just quit. So it is about knowing your team and about putting them in that, you know, that right seat on the bus. So tell me a little bit more. I know we didn't really talk about where we were going with this, but I'm really curious as to how is networking helping you get your business going and get you into veterinary hospitals?
It's huge. I mean, you've been in veterinary medicine for a long time. It's who you know. And as big as our field is, it's very small. And it's really very important to maintain those professional and personal relationships because our field, yes, we work with animals, but they need people to take them around, right? And so it's been incredible. You know, when I first moved back to the States and then moved out here, one of the surgeons I started working with knew one of the surgeons out in Vancouver. They went to vet school together. Okay, great. Hi, guys. and then just kind of onwards from there, it's really been so beneficial to just take that chance and say, hey, we're in the same space. I'm really, what you're saying is resonating with me. I have something that I would love to share. And just taking that risk and putting yourself out there, what's the worst you can get? Nope. Or be ghosted. Okay, well, then I'm moving on because I know this needs to be heard. This conversation needs to be had. So meeting people like yourself, Debbie, my gosh, this is just a fantastic opportunity. Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, listen, I'm thrilled to get to connect with you because I'm the whole time my mind is going, where can I put her to work? Where can I put her to work?
Anywhere. No. and that's just what it really, for me, is the connectivity, is that this is not something that I can do on my own. I don't want to. Like you were saying, back to delegation, like recognizing that, you know, you have strengths in this area. And that's why I feel like I'm a good instructor, is because I know when I don't know something, I know someone who does. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to reach out to them, you know, like some of my former teammates. I was really good at placing IV catheters, but the catheter gods and the jugular gods never spoke on the same day. I could be good at one thing one day, you know, it was when it's, but I knew I had my other gals out there. I'm like, all right, go get Lori. I know she can hit this. You know, you have your big aggressive dog handlers. You have your fractious cat people. I'm one of them. I love nasty cats because they're not, they're just, you know, fear-free,
just afraid.
Right here, you
they're
know?
Just afraid. Yeah,
they're just afraid. And honestly, I think that goes back to what you were saying with DISC is, and I've worked with that as well as VARC. They're based out of New Zealand. They're fantastic, Neil Fleming. But when I was doing all of my fear-free certification, I was like, wait a minute, this is the same thing.
Yes.
So it's just mind-blowing that if you know you'd really just take that second and then apply that active listening to your patients and then to your teammates, it's really.
And your clients, Because the talk I gave this morning at Can West was called The Fear-Free Human. And I did the same thing that you did.
Sorry.
It's called The Fear-Free Human.
I'm so sorry. Canada West out in Vancouver?
Yeah. Canada West. Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I worked.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
The surgical team with Dr. Francis and Dr. Kuzma. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This was the conference. This was the conference. So I was speaking at the conference today.
That's fantastic. Sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to interject.
Small world. Going back to veterinary medicine is a small world, even if you're in Canada when you're doing that. But yeah, this talk was the fear-free human. So when I, just like you, started to take my fear-free certification, I went, this is what I talk about all the time with people. And I started doing this talk where I'm paralleling for technical people and doctors, the behaviors of animals and the behaviors of humans so that they can see them side by side. Because this is how it makes it sticky, right? It's something I know really well. I'm not going to go up and pet this aggressive dog, but why would I go and interact with this human that's blowing its top? So It's about dealing with them in a very similar manner and understanding what your brain is doing in both situations to that animal and to that human, and what you can do to make it better in both directions. So
I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I probably on a much smaller scale, but that was one of my in-house CE conversations was about that and how communication and fear-free, it's really no different. You just have to take that. You know, we reworked that golden rule we all grew up with, right? Mm-hmm. So it's so refreshing to hear someone else say that in a much more profound way. So
well,
thank you.
You know, and we talk about you talked about a lot about the teams and the dynamic of team. And one of the things that people always ask me as a communication coach is, how can I eliminate drama in my hospital? And drama has a lot to do with having people who are in unhappy positions or not being acknowledged for the work they do. So when you were working in ER, which is basically a pressure cooker, as an instructor is stepping back and looking at it, what advice would you give to most veterinary managers or owners about alleviating some of this anxiety, stress, drama that happens in between team members?
Well, I think you nailed it, Debbie, really, is making sure that you acknowledge, one, that it's a situation, you know, express your appreciation, but not only say it, show up and do it, you know, so come out on the floor, get dirty with them, with us, you know, make sure that they know that you are not only listening to what they're saying, but that they've been heard. And if, you know, their concerns have been legitimized. And making sure that if they bring something to you that is actually a problem, it's addressed in a way that the other person isn't felt attacked and there isn't this whole, like, he said, she said, oh my gosh, this person's that one's favorite. And it's so challenging, especially in the larger practices, because there's so many people involved. And is it specialty medicine versus ER team? Is it CSRs versus the medical force and things like that? Which that's what I would always try to fight against. Like, just because the door closes doesn't mean the working relationship ends. And that's, I think, a part of it too, is making sure that there is that mutual respect between team members up and down the hierarchy, as well as interdepartmental wise, is having open communication, making sure that there is a debriefing session, that vet tech support team appreciation isn't just limited to 1 week in October. You know, having those monthly check-ins that aren't just like a blast on the floor, that are actually, hey, this is what we've heard, this is what we're gonna do. PTO and sick leave and things are separate, you know, and they're encouraged. And there's a social worker or support group provided. Do you guys have that in place, you know, to support your staff with healthcare that's not just, you know, dental, vision, and your, you know, general practice wellness visits? You know, do you have that mental health aspect to it? Do you have team bonding experiences? Do you know what your emergency team likes to do outside? Do you know who your strong team members are, right? It's knowing each other and making sure that they know that you have their back regardless. And that it's very hard. You know, I was in a middle management role, so I wasn't management and I wasn't a nurse. I was like in between in my last position. And it was challenging because I did not want to overstep and take a role that was belonged to the managerial team. And they did a good job with that. And, you know, we'd have those conversations and I'd tell my teammates, like, look, if it's of a certain nature, I have to take this up the line. I don't have that option. But being honest, mindful conversations, and practicing active listening and being supportive, I think would be the huge, biggest things to take away from that, is just don't just talk, don't just speak at me. You know, like that meme that's been going around lately, like, oh, you guys are doing a great job. Well, we're drowning out here. No, but I really don't know how you do it. We're not, you know, that kind of conversation. It's like,
exactly. Yeah,
really.
Exactly. Let's have a reality check and find out what's really happening here.
Like, don't give me Dunkin' Donuts on a day when I could actually just use to go outside, you know?
Right. Let me go to lunch. Let me go to the bathroom. You know, I managed the first practice I managed for 19 years, and it grew from 2 doctors to 5 doctors in 3 locations. And the team, there's a lot of longevity in that team. A lot of the people are still there. I left there in 2005. They're still working there. But when I got out and I started doing consulting work, and people were saying, oh, we don't have time to go to the bathroom, and we don't have time to go to lunch, and we are here 2 hours every night after close. And I thought, what is wrong with you people? Because this is not how I run a hospital. And my staff had an hour for lunch every day that was scheduled. And they went home at night on time because it was scheduled. And, you know, if they went to the bathroom, they had breaks because they were scheduled. And so I think so much of this in veterinary medicine, now ER is a different animal because ER, you don't know what's coming in the door.
Right.
But having enough staff, having it scheduled and believe that you can control it, and having the ability to say no and set boundaries, because these are all really important things to keep our staff from just frying. And and it goes beyond burnout. It is like fried and crisp in some of these hospitals. And so we need to make sure that we understand that we control the reins of the horse, and we do not let the horse run away from us. And so many practices I see, you know, this is an uncontrollable train. No, it's not. You can control it. And they're so afraid to say no to people that they're, I said, a lot of times we burn the candle at both ends, and that's because we set ourselves on fire, you know?
Oh, that, I like that. I like how you just said that too. You set yourself on fire. And I think you spoke to it perfectly, is we have to set those boundaries, which is something we struggle with as we are givers in this profession. You know, we always have to give. And I think, you know, that patient to caregiver ratio is so crucial, and there's a shortage of vet techs, nurses, and assistants everywhere. Internationally, like my Canadian friends are feeling the crunch, and there's just, we need to train more people. But it's really hard to do that when you have limited access and you're in the middle of a pandemic.
A pandemic, exactly. and then there's always, and we're in a pandemic.
And we're in that.
And however long that's going to last us. Well, one of the things that I've been reading recently is two things that are kind of stunning. First one, that is just during the first 6 months of the pandemic, 11 million people have adopted a new pet. So pressure on our hospitals. And the second one is that by the time of 2035 comes around, we will have a dire shortage of veterinarians and probably veterinary nurses because they're not staying in the profession as long as they used to stay 7 years and now it's five. So I think two things need to happen. First of all, we need to make sure that we're caring for our team and that we are extremely protective of our staff and give them a great work environment so that they don't leave and go to other places. We need to build the unicorn practice. Mm. And the second one is that
unicorns.
Yeah. We want to work for a unicorn. And the second one is understanding technology and leveraging it, because we are going to have to put technology into place that frees up tiny increments of our time all during the day in order for us to be the most productive that we can be with the limited staff that we have. And we're going to have to learn to say no, that there is only so many hours in the day and so much stuff that you can do. And it's difficult to do. And I know as a business owner, it's hard for me to say, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I can't get to that project that you want me to do until 3 or 4 months from now, because there's an opportunity that I'll lose that work. But then if I don't turn it down and I do poor quality work for the people that I have committed to, then my reputation suffers. So we need to realize that we need to look long-term, and we need to look long-term to keep our staff and long-term to keep our business and to keep our clients satisfied. And that's kind of tough. So it's a juggling act for sure that we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's gets lost in that conversation about work-life balance. It's not, it's probably one of my least favorite phrases, because mm-hmm. there is none, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Any relationship, working or otherwise, it's never 50-50. Someone's always doing more than the other one, and then it's going to switch. It is like a juggling act, all right? Which ball is going to keep up in the air today? And don't forget, you're part of that, you know? Because if we're not taking care of ourselves, no one else is going to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that type of that education process is your team, your working teammates should, right? Your employers should take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you have to be your own advocate. And that's kind of what we need to get that to be okay for people, is that it's okay. You're not being selfish. You are actually, if you're not okay, then the team's not okay, then the practice isn't okay. And really, why are we in this? For the patients. And if you're not okay, they can't be okay.
So now I'm going to switch horses a little bit on you as a new business owner, because I know what it's like to start a business and have an office in your home, and it's so easy to just stay in that office for hours and hours and to take on projects and to say one more thing. So tell me how you're managing that just not quite a year into your new business.
I fortunately have a very good business partner who says her chief job, she's our COO technically, but it's herding my cats. Yes. I have all these grand ideas, and I'm a big picture person. When I'm in a project, I'm very detail oriented, but I like to project. So my one friend, Sonia Olson, she taught me the term heartstorming, you know, because it's not just a brainstorm, we're feeling it too. So I take my heartstorms and then just, I don't have time to dream big, right? I dream small, I dream big. And so Caitlin is really good at making sure, okay, no, we're working on this today and this week and then next month, and here's our plan. Right. So business-wise, she keeps me on track there. And then I've given my kids both that, you know, not approval, but I guess is the right word, but just their voices. I hear them and they use them. It's like, all right, you've been down there. You've been you're on your phone and you're on your computer and you're doing it's my time. You are supposed to be, because I've made a schedule for everyone, especially with virtual learning, about what our hours are, what it looks like. And like, see, from 3 to 7, you are ours. So I was like, you're right. I can do this after you're in bed, you know? So my family holds me accountable. And then when I'm starting to slip, they're really very unapologetically loud about it. So it's... And they're right. You know, I said to you earlier, they are one of the reasons I wanted to do this, was to be more present. And when I'm not, they have absolutely every right, as they should, to call me on that. And, mm-hmm. but I do find that when I stay up too late then and be like, oh, I've got to finish this writing, or I'm what I showed you earlier, I'm making, you know, artificial vessels for training. So I was like, it's not cured yet. I've got to make it work and got to get this shipped out to London. No, it's okay. It will not matter if you ship it tomorrow, like 2 days from now, it'll still get there. And being okay with that, because in the ER where I'm most at home, or in the OR, like doing anesthesia, every second counts.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. There's always something going on, and you always have to be doing something. I mean, I am that person that when you go on vacation, the first 24 hours is me like, I can just sit here. Okay. You know, I like to be up and, you know, paddle boarding or body surfing or, okay, fine. I will slow it down. I will just go look at shells, but I have to be doing it.
I really want to look at seashells. Yeah.
I miss them.
As somebody who lives at the beach, I have a hard time sitting on the beach. So my husband can sit out there and he can just watch people and he can listen to music and he'll just do stuff. And me, either I got to be reading a book, or if I'm not reading a book, I got to be walking around. Mm-hmm. And I have so many seashells in my house now. I just will find them and then I'll just throw them back down on the sand because, but it's I got to have something to do right. Rather than just sitting there if I don't have some people. So you it's, yeah, it's a challenge. It is a challenge sometimes, but then again, it's going back to knowing yourself and you've got to, let other people help you too. That's a huge thing. My husband is absolutely one of those people who says, okay, you know, it's time. And I have a schedule just like you. So my Monday nights are my late night, 8 o'clock Monday nights. And then, I have half days, you know, and on the weekends I cut off on Friday and I don't do anything on the weekends. And so it's important to have that schedule when you are starting anything new. I think that especially when it's something that I can tell that you love this and I love what I do too. So for me, it's fun. It's not a work-life balance thing. This is an integration of some of the most fun stuff I do into my work and how I live and what I enjoy. So my husband has looked at me many times and said, I wish I loved what I did as much as you love what you do. And I said, yeah, I'm sure you did. Cause he was in the flooring business. And so it was not as nearly as much fun as animals.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, my husband, when we first started dating, he's like, how are you not exhausted all the time? And I was like, well, what are you talking about? He's like, you're so passionate about everything. Like, how are you not tired? And I was like, I'm just, I get excited and I want to share that and I want to do it. And people are like, you're making me tired. Slow down. Which is funny because my parents are like, yeah, remember when you were awful in the mornings and you couldn't talk to you before 8 o'clock? Yeah. I mean, I drink coffee now, so it's better.
Coffee solves a lot of things to get you cranked up in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
So I do want to ask you a little bit about your business and how it works.
Mm-hmm. In what regard? Like what model we're following?
Yeah, or? So like if I were a veterinary hospital and mm-hmm. I wanted to involve you guys in training some of my staff, tell me how that would play out.
Absolutely. So you have a couple of options just because we know not one size fits all. We can do the full Monty and we can do the evaluation. We can do all of your customization of your templates and create the program based upon your specifications. We can do it piecemeal. We can just do the content that you have the ideas. You just want us to do it for you. Or we can do the webinars, workshops, what have you. You can do all of it a la carte, or you can get the whole everything like I said, and in different various stages of that. So if you just, you know, small practices obviously aren't going to want and or need the same thing as a larger scale practice. So we create the whole training program based upon those principles I was mentioning earlier, learning, developing, and mastery. And then our method is actually, we refer to it as the higher method. We're fine tuning like the book behind it. So just stay tuned for that. But it's talking to the whole picture, similar to what you were discussing, Debbie, is about, you know, your managerial approach, how you implement things, communication styles and learning approaches, how you do your onboarding and orientation process, how you do continuing education and development for your existing team. Because that's another balancing factor, right? Is you don't want to forget who's already been there, not just focus on, oh, get more people in. What about these guys? So that's another part of it. So we have the training program for the new team members, we have the existing teams, and then the continual growth. So whatever on that scale you want and or need, we'll tailor it. We'll meet you where you are, digital, in person, or otherwise. And we are working with getting all of our webinars and things on our partner, VetBloom. We work with them to on their platform. So that's where all of our materials will end up living. We'll be with them.
Cool. Well, training is always a challenge for veterinary hospitals, and they always like, I don't have time to train. But to me, it is such an important part of your commitment to your business is to get your staff trained to where they need to be. And the point that you made with the existing team, I think, is extremely important. And one of the comments that I will typically make is, I have not had algebra since the 8th grade. And if I don't use algebra, which I don't very often, then I'm going to constantly struggle with that. But right. You're not going to do 100% of all your work or everything you've been trained to do every single day of your life. And so constantly reinforcing that training is incredibly important to keep your skill set up. And
absolutely.
That right there is what your existing people do. Plus they want to learn more stuff. Constant growth is an important part of having a great culture in your hospital. And really good people always want to learn more. They want to be more than where they are right now. And you're right. They want to gain mastery of their job. And that's the kind of people you want working on your floor. Absolutely.
Right. And that's the other part of it too, is creating those types of little CE events that, hey, let's do medical math. Let's do advanced catheters. Let's figure out how to make this happen. And get everyone involved in that process. And, coming at it from the industrial sector where we work with our clients in that realm is we've all been to those lunch and learns where you're like, okay, just give me the food. This is painful. And changing the delivery, right? Making it more approachable and applicable and relatable, So having all of those going back to DISC and talking about how we learn and how we interpret information will make it all of the things. Because what resonates with me may not work for you. Mm-hmm. So let's have a hands-on section. Let's have a talk to each other. Let's have the visual demonstration and let's give you reading materials. You just hit everybody. Mm-hmm. And you have to constantly reevaluate that and change it and evolve, because the only constant in this world is change.
It's change. And we've compressed a lot of change into 6 months period of time in this last little deal here. We have just a few minutes left. We've talked a lot, and I can tell that we are truly sisters under the skin, coming from your medical side and my front desk, probably communication side.
Oh, it's just the beginning, right, Debbie?
Yes. So in what advice would you give someone out there in the world who was really considering doing something similar to what you did, to what I did, to take this profession that we have? I think people feel a lot of times they're stuck, right? I can't do anything. I'm, like you said, I'm just a receptionist. I'm just a manager. I'm just a technician. And like you, I've never defined myself as a just anything. And I fuss at anybody who says that into any of my classes, mm-hmm. that we don't get to be just. So how would you encourage them to, step out of that comfort zone?
Honestly, do it. I'm not trying to be flippant. It's just really, I was hemming and hawing. And of course, there's always that financial, security standpoint to it of like, oh my God, but what if it doesn't work? Well, yeah, but what if it does? Mm-hmm. And really the cliches are what they are, because they hold true in so many instances. The only regrets that you have are the ones, that you didn't take, the risks that you didn't take. And I, talking to other friends that had started their own businesses and things, it's like, you know where you're at right now. You know what you're doing. You don't know what this could be. And you will miss out on it if you don't do it. So again, I would go back to kind of redoing that, taking a minute, taking a day to use one of your PTO days. I know you don't have many, but take one or a half a day and really just sit down with yourself if you're a writer or not, but write it out. What do you love to do? What do you like to do? What don't you? What are your absolutes on either ends of those spectrum? And find in the middle a combination of what those are. And is there a viable business plan here? I bet you there is. If they can sell like rehydratable gooey beads, there's something that you have that is absolutely as marketable and necessary. Because if you are an integral member of your veterinary practice, you will be an integral member of this society no matter what you do. And that's to remember that, is that you matter. You matter. And whatever or however you define that, you will make it happen. and make that difference in your life and everyone else's around you.
Excellent advice. You know, find a need and fill it. I think that is just the simplest tool to building a business. Is there something that you do that you like to do that somebody else would like and yeah. or need out there? And then the other part is do not undervalue your worth. That is incredibly important. And I think that for so many years, I have seen, especially I have a lot of interaction with managers, and I see how much or how little they make. And I see people like you with degrees and then extra degrees. And that I don't think that people understand, you know, the value of themselves and to ask for it, because you're right. And when, unless you say, if you don't ask for it, the answer is always no. And, but justify, be able to say, here's what I bring to the table. Here's the skill sets. Here's yes. the data behind why I am asking for whatever it is. I can prove my worth. Over the years, I've had people come to me and go, hey, my rent went up. I need a raise. Well, okay, what did you do? What would you do to justify that raise? And what other new skill have you done? What other new task have you taken on? What have you done to improve the practice? Because if you've done any of those things, I'm happy to give you some more money. But if you're just sitting here and say, my rent went up and you're no better than you were the day you walked in the door, then I'm sorry, you know, you're not going to get any more money out of me. So I think that that is an important part of also the mindset of an entrepreneur, but even people who are still just in practice doing the thing that they do every single day, is to understand what they bring to the table and to not be afraid to speak up for themselves in mm-hmm. practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, but I also really appreciate what you said is to have things to back that up. Mm-hmm. It goes along that conversation of, you know, what's the difference between confidence and arrogance? Well, confidence, you can back up what you can do mm-hmm. versus I can do that. Really? Show me. Better yet, teach me.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like that.
It's one of my favorite. I would do that to my students all the time. Like, oh yeah. Oh good. Then teach me how to do it. And I just sit there, and some of them, gosh darn it, would do it. And it was fabulous, you know? And I was like, exactly.
That's exactly what I wanted you to do.
And that's, and they looked at me like, you just did. I was like, I just did a thing there. Yeah. Just totally. but that's what it should be, you know, teaching and learning. It's not a passive thing. It's a dynamic environment. And yes, I talk with my hands because I work with my hands, and that's part of who I am. So I'm going to grab you into this conversation and make you stay here. You might get a little uncomfortable, but I promise I'll let you go eventually. And we're both going to be the better for it because we've taken that time to hear what the other one has to say. And we've learned from one another. It's never going to stop, you know? And that's, I learned that from my grandparents too. It's like, you know, the minute I stop learning is the minute I'm done.
And you know, Alyssa, you touched on something that I think I would really like to talk to you about. And I know we're going to go over, but that's all right, because this is my podcast and I can do what I want to do.
I love it so much.
I, over the years, have had many licensed technicians say, I'm not going to teach anyone my job or my duties because I went to school and I got these, you know, I paid and I invested in my education. And I, you know, I have a degree. I have a 4-year degree in animal science from NC State, pre-vet. I have read more books than the law's got allows. And I have always believed that knowledge not shared is knowledge wasted. So tell me what you would say to those licensed technicians when I'm trying to encourage them to teach because they want to hoard their knowledge.
How would they have learned anything if someone didn't teach them? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wouldn't be here if some people didn't take that same, you know, if they had taken that approach to me. I was an unlicensed, uncertified, unregistered technician for 6 years before I went to school. 6 years, if not longer. Hang on, let's see. When did I get in the industry? Yep, 6 years. Mm-hmm. So I would not be where I'm at. And I would challenge them to, so then you're limiting our profession to only those that can take the, you know, go to school. What about the online options? You know, you don't know their story. Where are mm-hmm. they coming from? And again, if you want to be able to do your job and help your patients, it's not, you can't do that on your own. You can't hold that cat and place its catheter, good on you if you can. But if you can do that good of a kitty burrito, then I'm hoping that cat can actually breathe. So I think they'd be crippling our profession. And I absolutely agree that, yes, it's very important to take this seriously, to do the schooling and to take the credentialing and put the worth behind that. But do not discount or discredit those that work their tails off in practice so then they can get there. Because there is something huge about hands-on learning for the majority of us. You know, involve me and I will understand, right? It's a proverb for a reason, because until you are actually in the trenches, covered in who knows what, and actually please don't tell me what I'm covered in. I just don't know.
Better not to know.
I don't want to know. Once you've lived it and then you learn it, it's a whole other experience. Honestly, give me a street tech that goes to school over a book tech any day, because they know what it's like. And you've worked with those individuals, right? You've worked with also those clinicians that were and or weren't techs or nurses before they went to veterinary school. Very different experience. Not one are better than the other, but different. You know, they have a different appreciation or understanding of what the team dynamic is like. So what I would say to them is do not discount or discredit life experience, because it is what's gotten me to where I am today.
Yep. I will agree with you 100%. I believe in home growing my technicians. At the time I left my last practice, I had four who were doing distance learning, but also being mentored by my veterinarians in-house to get their RVTs. And that's the other thing that we should be doing, is we should be investing in our team, because I think they say, oh, well, you know, I would like to go get licensed, or maybe I can't afford it. And then the veterinary practice owners, we can't find any licensed technicians. Grow your own. I mean, really, there are people who are willing to do it. You know, just put some accountability in place there. You can't say, okay, I'll pay for you to go be a technician and you got 10 years.
Oh, no, yeah. No.
That's not going to get it. No, but you know, I'll pay for your tuition. You work for me for X amount of years and, you know, we'll reimburse you for your technician, you know, through payroll deduction. Okay, however, be creative and being able to get people to get their education.
Yes, because I mean, think about it. We all have to get CE every 2 years. Mm-hmm. So really, it's just a different kind.
Yes, absolutely. All right.
You're paying it forward.
Pay it forward. That's exactly right. You know, it's really been funny all these years, and I'm sure you've probably seen it too. Everybody says, oh, we're so shorthanded. We need help. And you bring somebody new in there and they are so mean to them that you're like, but you wanted some help. So why are you being so mean to this new person?
Well, and that's where this comes into play, right? Is having that training team created within your team that supports that individual all the way through, like a tapering prednisone dose. Okay.
There
start them off high and wean them off. So that you don't have that experience that you're thrown to the wolves and then they're gone and you're right back where you started.
And you are right back where you started. Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Well, listen, this has been a pleasure and I really appreciate your time. And learning more about your business. Tell me, do you have any final words of wisdom to share with team members out there?
You're not alone. You may feel like it. I absolutely understand it. But as soon as you connect with us, you're automatically part of the EV team. And we are always going to be there. So on your days that you feel like you can't reach out to anyone, Google us up. Send me an email. I will get back to you. I promise. Because we have to make sure that we take care of each other. Otherwise, what teams do we have left? So just reach out to me. Let's keep a hold of each other and let's support one another and not let take each other down amidst all of this. We need each other more than ever. So let's be part of the EV team. I'm here for
Sounds
you.
Good. Sounds good. Now tell us a little bit about how to reach out to your company.
Sure.
And where the best way to locate that.
We're all over social. So Instagram, Emp Vet Team, and then we're on Facebook, same name. And then email is admin@empvet.team. And we have a YouTube channel. So just Google us and you can get in touch any of those ways. You can email us via our website, direct message us via social platforms, and we will get back to you pretty quick turnaround time. Just let us know how we can support you guys and make it better, stronger together.
All right. Thank you again so much for
thank
your time
you so
today.
Much. This has been a pleasure and an honor to be a part of it. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I know that your lessons are going to do some good out there in the world, and that I know that you and I both are just doing the best we can to support the people that we love, and those are the folks in veterinary medicine. So thank Absolutely. You so much for your time today and being on this episode of The Bend.
Happy to take the turns with you.